is dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News. And today, our continuing dialogue with Mae Brussel, political research analyst specializing in assassinations. Well, Mae, I know that we've got an awful lot of ground to cover here today, and you've got a lot of things to turn people on to, some addresses they can write to, and organizations from which people can get more information if they desire and all that. I do want to touch just briefly on something in a promotional nature. I know that Paul Krasner was down to see us over the past weekend. He's the publisher of The Realist, and that he was interested in your programs. He's been listening to them over the past several weeks, and I understand that you're doing an article for The Realist, which will also be published in The Village Voice. I know we can't touch on the nature of it or anything
like
that.
Oh, no, the reason we got together, Bob, was this. I picked up a copy of The Realist. I've taken it for years. He's in his 15th year now publishing The Realist. And I picked up a copy Friday morning. It was about 7:30 or 8, and it was by the side of my bed. And I noticed on the back it mentioned an article about Sirhan, that the Scientologists were suing The Realist because Paul had done an article titled, or was going to do an article titled, How Sirhan Worked His Way Up in Scientology. And the Scientologists were suing The Realist for $500,000. And whenever a lawsuit comes in pertaining to political assassinations, I step right in because I feel I'm as knowledgeable as anyone in the United States. So I picked up The Realist to give some suggestions to Mr. Krasner. I've never met him or talked to him before in my life, but I've read his magazine all these years. And the office used to be in New York. I would have called New York. I called New Jersey last week, and I called New York and Washington. And I looked at the back, and it said they had a San Francisco office. So I called San Francisco, and the answering exchange gave me another phone number, which is closer to our area. He's south of San Francisco for the weekend. So I called there, and he was out, and I called back about 10 o'clock, and he had just come in. He was walking along the beach thinking up several ideas for a article he's going to write, and I picked up the phone, introduced myself, and offered some suggestions on the lawsuit of against them regarding the Sirhan article. And we talked about 10 minutes on the phone, and he said, tell me where you live. And he came right down to Carmel and spent 2 days at my home. And that's how we got to know each other, because the article, I don't know if he wants us to divulge now what he's doing for his 50th anniversary issue, but the subject that he was working on and walking on the beach when I tried to reach him that morning and trying to put his head together was one of the subjects that we have spent a long time, a whole hour on your show, and many times we've referred to this particular subject. And this was what he was thinking about as he walked the beach, and I'm a great believer in ESP. Just as he walked in the home, I tried again, and he was there. And I said, I can help you on that, too. And he came down, and we put our heads together.
I don't think Paul would mind if we give the title of the article, which would give the general idea of what you've been writing about.
I think we should wait. I think we should leave that for when it comes out in the publication, and just say that he is in the area, and he's one of the great satirists in America. He has a really great mind, and it's great to have him down the area so the West Coast can get to know him. He's been the East all this time.
Okay, well, we tried to promote it, but May won't let us, so let's move on to other things.
You can promote The Realist. It's a wonderful paper, and people could subscribe to that. I'll bring in the address next week. I have a lot of addresses and publications that I want you to get your pencils and write down today, the people who are listening. I always suggest having a pencil handy and writing down certain names and publications, because if you do this and if you take the program seriously, which I hope you do, you will see these names coming up again in the news, and they will ring a bell if you write them down. It'll help you put things together.
Oh, let me do mention, incidentally, before we leave The Realist, that KLRB will be participating in another way in future issues of The Realist. Ben Rosenbluth, who has heard Sunday afternoons here on KLRB,
will also be appearing in the pages of The Realist. I think they're actually going to transcribe some of his raps from KLRB, from his program, and just run them word for word as articles in The Realist.
Oh, really?
So that'll be something else to look forward to in The Realist.
Okay, that's great.
It's almost like we're forming a partnership with Paul Krasner. But
well, he's down, you know, on the West Coast enjoying our beautiful scenery, and I hope he enjoys this area. It's very lovely. Now, I have a problem each week in this hour, whether to continue giving proof that there were conspiracies that killed Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, or whether we should take broad descriptions of the conspiratorial actions as they affect our lives. We jump around on this show. A lot of people say you jump around from one subject to another, and everything here is all related to one fact. You know that, Bob, that there were conspiracies to take control of the power of our government. And my endeavor each week is to describe the news of the week that affects our lives that I think is based upon my research in the conspiracies. And, of course, the number one subject in the news again this week is Howard Hughes. We talked about him last week.
Yeah, we touched on that last week. We didn't really get into great detail on that.
We didn't really get into the details of Howard Hughes, and I did say last week that I thought he was Adolf Hitler without being surfaced, that this man had the power of Adolf Hitler, and I don't mean to scare you, and a lot of people don't take that seriously when you throw it out over the air, but maybe we could go a little farther into the source of his power. And there's a large article in Examiner this week, San Francisco Examiner, by Robert Mayhew, in which he said, Howard Hughes wants total power. I don't think he feels he has enough power. He wants power over everyone. He craves power. There is no doubt in my mind he feels he is more powerful than the president. He wishes to control power, end quotes. Well, this is what I was saying last week.
Yeah, well, there are indications to that effect. You know, if the president goes to him when he wants to borrow money, you know, Howard, will you co-sign for my cousin here or whatever?
Well, I think he selects the president and he selects the vice president and he selects the wars or who our enemies are, what weapons we'll use and how we'll effect these changes. And he is using the people who wanted power in the last war, and he's combining the American know-how and the secrecy and the money and the wealth of this nation with their minds.
Well, where does all his power come from? Because he doesn't really have that much money. He's got maybe $2.5 billion, $3 billion, something like that. And that's not, you know, there are people on this planet who have a great deal more money than that, and corporations certainly that have a great deal more money.
They have a great deal more money, but they don't have the power or the genius to put it together. And Napoleon or Alexander the Great, there were, I'm sure the Catholic Church had more money, you know, as a body, the Pope, than some of these conquerors, you know. But you have to get the people to put it together into a plan where you can go west and conquer and take, the way they did the Indians in Mexico, South America, or the American Indians. You have to have, power is not always the wealth, it is the ability to control people's lives as
well,
if they were grains of sand.
I was going to speak about is Howard Hughes has not demonstrated the ability to concentrate his forces. He has not demonstrated a great organizational talent or a great managerial talent. Well, look at what's happened in Las Vegas. Everything he took over there is just going to decay now.
No, because there is a battle of the powers that I was trying to explain last week. It's not decaying. It's come to an apex where they're fighting openly, like two major powers. Like you see, I saw a movie this week on television of Henry VIII. They're running this series, you know, of Henry VIII and his wives, and you see Henry VIII marrying a German wife because he's going to battle against Spain and France that have lined up. They are top powers, they are powers, but they fight each other, and one of them is going to topple. But he is organized. He does have an organization. He isn't toppled yet.
Well, is he deliberately letting his Las Vegas holdings go to seed for some reason?
Well, we briefly went into that last week, but I thought I would give a little background and suggest three books that people can read to understand the power of Hughes. And you write these down, and then I'll offer you some solutions on what you can do, because what he's really doing, the power he has, is over us. And you can't forget that. You know, it is over our lives. Now, one of the books that I suggest is The Guns of August. And that was the book that was written about World War I. And it explains the origins of World War I it came out a few years ago. It's in paperback now. But it was a totally unnecessary war, provoked war of European powers fighting among each other, where countries were pillaged and burned under. Nothing much was accomplished. They tried to shift the powers of Europe, and lives were lost, homes were lost, and blood. But at the end of World War I, Germany was termed defeated on paper. And Guns of August is the story of World War I. The second book that follows chronologically to understand the political murders of the Kennedys and Martin Luther King or what's happening today is the book I refer to every week on the air called Inspection for Disarmament. Barbara Tuchman wrote the first book, Guns of August, if you want to buy that. Barbara Tuchman. The second book is Inspection for Disarmament, edited by Seymour Melman, M-E-L-M-A-N. That's Columbia University Press. And that is the book that says that Germany refused to disarm after the Versailles Treaty, and that they had two armies, the legitimate army on the front and the illegitimate army behind. And in order to take power, to bring in Hitler, to make it a major power in the world again, to conquer the world and control the world and make it a pure white Aryan world, two methods were employed. One was political assassinations of 400 leading political figures in Germany, and the other was the manipulation of the courts, the Justice Department. Now, that period of history we're talking about in the 1930s, from the end of World War II in 1920s and 30s, is where America parallels now, where we have defeat in Vietnam, but we don't want to admit defeat. And we also, according to the minds of men like Hughes or our State Department and Allen Dulles and John Foster Dulles, we didn't win World War II because a lot of people wanted Hitler to win. We didn't want Russia as an ally. So the system was set up through our OSS and CIA to incorporate the best of the German minds again to continue the war. In other words, I maintain that we haven't been in a peaceful state since World War I. Now, the third book that I want to mention that's very important is called Project Paperclip. And you write this down. It's a fairly new book. It's called Project Paperclip. It was reviewed in Saturday Review of Literature, December 71, by Clarence Lasby, L-A-S-B-Y. I've ordered it from a local bookstore, and I have a review of it. Now, Project Paperclip brought in Germans, 642 alien specialists. And the whole point of this book is that in 1941, when we declared war on Hitler, our State Department, John Foster Dulles and Allen Dulles, made up their minds that those Germans would be our allies. So in 1945, Allen Dulles was working in Switzerland and incorporated all of the so-called defeated Nazis and brought them to this country. By 1942, our State Department had an office in Switzerland working with those Nazis. If they won, they were our allies. If they lost, they were our allies. In 1942, when Germany was at the height of their barbarian episodes, we were making arrangements to incorporate the top Nazis into our State Department, into our system. And we took in 642 alien specialists, and it was called Project Paperclip. Now, this is where Howard Hughes comes in.
Now, when you say we were going to incorporate these Nazis, you're not necessarily referring to the elected government of the United States of America, are you? You're referring to the government behind the government?
The government of the United States elected members of Congress. The members of Congress elected Mr. Roosevelt or Mr. Truman. But Mr. Truman worked with a State Department and advisors, and the people who pay for elections, who put in elected representatives, are people like Henry Morgenthau, the DuPonts, the U.S. Steel, the munitions makers, the airplane manufacturers, the war machine that was set up. The economy was geared to a war economy. And they didn't mind continuing the war. They were against the Soviet Union. And they could make money off of perpetuating this hatred. And they had the cloak of respectability because the Soviets were atheists. They would scream about how Stalin was committing atrocities. They never talked about Germany's atrocities. You see, the munition makers that put in your presidents and pay your congressional expenses decide who is your ambassador in each country. Those are political plums. They decide who makes your foreign policy, who's the assistant secretary of state, who's the secretary of state. Those are appointed positions. So the local citizen, when he's told we want a peace economy or we want peace, like Richard Nixon says, we're going to combine our forces for peace, and he gives you a budget that's nothing but warfare, and you look where the contracts are going, all of the aerospace industries, and it dates back to these days. You see, it goes back to those times. Mm. Now, Howard Hughes is described on and off as probably the world's richest man. And that is only made through hardware. Airplanes, airplane parts, submarines. He just launched a new ship down in San Diego that was very secret until it was launched. It'll scrape all the minerals and goodies off the bottom of the ocean. Howard Hughes will siphon those up, whatever has drifted down to the bottom of the sea. His ship will sift those up.
Well, then he has more money than people like Onassis or the DuPonts or...
Well, he works with them. You see, Hughes, if the Onassis and DuPont want to keep the oil going or they want to keep their stake in the natural resources, there's certain people that they need to be president in order to keep that power. In other words, if Greece becomes a democratic kind of government, you divide the wealth like you're going to do now in Pakistan, Mr. Onassis would be the first man killed. You see, this is what's happening in Pakistan. 22 families have been removed from power because they own all the resources of an entire country. So it's up to, they were fighting for their life, really their money. That's what it equated. And men like Howard Hughes, who can employ ex-generals into his defense industries, who put out reports that we need these ships, or you hire the intelligence system to say that Russia is out flanking us in all military weapons, then we increase our budget, and our budget gives him more money, and he keeps the power. It's just it's a tiger-by-the-tail scare. It's a Cold War that's been going on and on and on until all the power is in the hands of a few people, and one of those people is Howard Hughes. And he works with the German cartels. Howard Hughes is a very racist man. And this is one of the suggestions I want to put out. How long are the blacks going to take the fact that the man who is number one of all munition makers in the country is anti-black? He's made remarks on public record now that the blacks have gone far enough for 100 years. He only associates with Mormons, and you know the position they take about blacks. It's up to the black community in America now to say, is our tax money, their budget, going to somebody who is a racist? If we're going to discriminate in our hiring practices, a clear study should be done on the amount of money going to use contracts all over the world and what percentage of blacks are employed.
Well, then it would seem to me that maybe the estimates that I've read on Howard Hughes' wealth, that you disagree with them. You know, like in Bashful Billionaire and various books that have been written about Howard Hughes, they estimate his fortunes at about $2 billion, which is an awful lot of money. But we're talking about more money than that when we're talking about this kind of power.
Yeah, but when you're talking about power, Bob, you have to understand something, that some people can accrue power and destroy total civilizations without any money. Like, you can go into Hitler's bank account, and he certainly had power, but in terms of world wealth, he didn't have anything. You know, the story goes back to the famous Checkers speech of Richard Nixon when he was put on the carpet because people felt he was spending thousands of dollars that no other congressman ever had, and maybe $100,000 more for postage and for speeches and traveling expenses. And Richard Nixon made the famous Checkers speech in which he broke down his money and he said, I have a home in which I owe $20,000, and I have a family that I borrowed $5,000, I'm paying them back with interest, and my wife doesn't have a fur coat. Well, and I have a dog that my children received that was free, and his name is Checkers. The point is that Richard Nixon is the CIA man. He's the front man. If no other congressman has a slush fund of $100,000 that keep him in the news for 4 years continuously instead of raising money through the Republican club, he's always in the news. You see Nixon's name, everything he does appears in every picture and every speech, and he clouds out any other person that would run against him.
Because and if his personal fortune didn't amount to anything other than a few debts on a house and a dog and a cloth coat and all that sort of thing, then where did the money come from that was keeping him in the news?
The point I'm trying to make is this was a hidden government, it is, and Richard Nixon is the moving agent of that government, and he doesn't have to have wealth. The fact that he spends a lot of money traveling or gets the newsprint or goes everywhere that they want him to go and has more postage, he puts it on the basis, I'm doing you taxpayers a favor because instead of using your $100,000 in taxes for my postage, someone else is paying it. But if Howard Hughes is paying it or the Bank of America, then Richard is doing something for them that no other congressman has. And then every other congressman should have $100,000 to travel. Otherwise, it's not a fair election.
And you had mentioned on earlier programs that the Bank of America was instrumental in getting Richard Nixon launched onto his successful political career.
That's right.
At the time he was in the armed services.
You see, when you're talking about power, you think of a man like Kim Philby, who was head of British intelligence for so many years and then defected to the Soviet Union. And I mention him because he's maybe the world's most famous agent. Kim Philby didn't have wealth. He lived in an ordinary dwelling, and his family didn't have wealth. They don't have chauffeurs and coats. You can have power. If your head is straight where you want to manipulate lives, you don't need wealth. It's a game you play whether you have $2 billion. Mr. Getty and Mr. Hunt may be equally as wealthy as Howard Hughes, or they may have more. And they also use their power in this hideous kind of way. But Howard Hughes is a game player. This has been obvious to me for years, and I think what's frustrating everybody now is how many games he's playing on everybody or they're playing on us. But the amount of wealth doesn't matter when I talk about power. It's in his head or in the organization they have. And another thing that I think you have to bring up in the question in an election year, and I keep falling back on that, is that in the exposure of Howard Hughes, it comes out that his Secretary of Defense, who is Clark Clifford under Lyndon Johnson, was the attorney for Hughes Tool Company. And since when does the Secretary of Defense get related to this wealthy industry of war machine? It's one thing to defend yourself, and it's another thing to pull from the people all of their taxes and all the money that would go into school and housing and education and medical care. A country like Canada has a medical care plan, $1 a day if you get sick. We read about the graft in Medicare is losing millions of dollars. Ross Perot in Texas is a billionaire off of the Blue Shield, Blue Cross. Something drastic is happening in this country, and the priorities are all wrong. You see, and instead of having all the benefits that this country should have from the wealth and from the work, because most people do hard work every day. There are many people not trying to work and be part of the system. But when all this is going to more contracts for a man who's a racist, who's tied in to a system which does not represent the wishes of the majority, it's time to stop and analyze what is happening behind this power block. And then another thing you have to realize is when we talk about used power is that there's one large block of people linked into control, and we talked about this last week. We just barely scratched it. That the team of Howard Hughes, if you think he doesn't have power, Bob, I think the team of Howard Hughes and what's going down there involves Lyndon Johnson and Bobby Baker and the syndicate and Richard Nixon and Donald Nixon and Bebe Rebozo. It's no coincidence that Melvin Belli spoke up yesterday as an attorney for Howard Hughes that he should be the attorney for Jack Ruby. See, my research goes into these things. It's no coincidence that when I do research on the one man who actually helped frame Alger Hiss, who worked with Whitaker Chambers, was the turning point in making Chambers talk. His name was Isaac Don Levine. And that man worked with Marina Oswald right after the assassination and brought her funds and was associated, the source of contact was somebody through Fox Studio. Well, this week it seems that Jean Peters, the woman, the only person that goes back and forth to Hughes, is married to the vice president of Fox Studio. And it was Fox Studio and Spyros Skouras, who, along with Tom Pappas from Greece, said to Nixon, if you're going to be president, you take Agnew. You see, these names between my assassination work and the study of power all interweave and link. And Spiros Skouras and Fox Studio, Marina Oswald, Isaac Don Levine, they all blend in. Melvin Belli. You take each of these murders and the names all wrap around. I'm talking about the Sirhan, the Martin Luther King, and John Kennedy. The lawyers, they all wrap into one package and they interrelate.
In other words, what happened was that when John Kennedy was assassinated, you weren't satisfied with the Warren Commission findings, and you decided to do a little research on your own, or a lot of research, as it turns out, about 10 years. I guess your original motive was just to try to find out who killed John Kennedy. And then when the other assassinations started coming up and you started finding the same names related to all these assassinations, the same lawyers, the same this, the same contacts and so forth, then you came upon the realization
of the large,
which you assert that our government fell in Dallas that November and was taken over by a conspiracy, and that everything that you've touched on since then in your research has only served to confirm this suspicion.
Every day that some news story breaks, it confirms my original research on the John Kennedy murder, and I did, you know how extensive that was, Bob, on cross-following the commission hearings. I worked with the archive documents and papers that were witnesses before the commission. And I had evidence that was planted and physical evidence to prove who did the murder that was altered, and some was locked up. And then when these other murders came along, I saw the similarities, and then it all wove into one plan. And I brought into the studio an outline of that plan. Very few people in the country have one. I don't know how much to share with the people out there. I don't know how strong they are.
Well, in other words, what I was trying to set the framework is that Mae Brussels' assertion, what she wants to get across to you, is not merely who killed John Kennedy, who killed Robert Kennedy, and she's not a murder mystery investigator. Her assertion is that our government has been taken over by an insidious conspiracy and that all these murders are related to it, but the main thing that she wants to bring to your attention and awaken you to and get you to do some of your own studying so you can prove it to your own satisfaction and then do something about it is that the government of the United States of America is no longer the government we think it is.
And it has not been since 1960. You see, the machinery was set up when our OSS became the CIA. The machinery was set up that if any person by a fluke was elected, he could be done away with and the power would go right back into the hands of the people they intended to keep it in. And it was only a matter of time, even though Richard Nixon lost the election to John Kennedy, it was never that he was going to fade away. He would reappear at another time, and he did. And there was no way that he couldn't come back and surface, because the machinery for wiping out the people that stood in his way is so carefully laid out and easy to understand now. It may seem complicated to some who have never heard the show the first time, but those who've been following it every week seem, you know, to be getting the pattern. They'll call me and see certain things in the news and begin to pick up the relationship of things we have said. Some man, a writer who did 6 years' work on research of Alger Hiss and Whitaker Chambers, Meyer Zelig, he lives in the Carmel Valley on the weekends from San Francisco, he comes down, was talking to me on the phone this week, and he was reading a book called Lansky, a biography of Lansky. And Meyer was really excited because it carried the relationship of Lyndon Johnson and Nixon and the syndicate and mafia, and all of a sudden it was one cloak. And I said, Meyer, I've tried to tell you this for years. It's coming. Now that it's being printed, it somehow people say, oh, yes, I see it that way. You know, and this is what I've said was happening. But because it is an election year, I have to take time out to say, Bob, that part of my work is to try and stop the elections. And people may wonder, well, who out there is saying, what woman thinks that she can stop the elections in 1972? But when I go off the air, I work very hard night and day till the next week until we talk. And I'm sending out letters and Xerox machines, contacting people all over the nation. And I'm getting myself ready to go to Washington. I hope to go before some congressional committees. And I think I can bring enough documents to say that we have to sit with a group of people and examine everything that's locked up in the National Archives before we continue this madness. This Howard Hughes is just a little symptom or a boil, a pimple of the whole sickness, but it's a reflection of ourselves because the man down there is going to embroil lots of people, and a lot of things are happening, and you should read those articles every day that come out. I have a document that was brought from me to me from the Southwest, written by a trial lawyer who participates in legal cases down in the Texas-Fort Worth area. And it was brought to me because he felt that we have a, quotes, a fascist, totalitarian, secret police agency that's stronger and more devious than anyone believes, that he felt was threatening our democracy.
Okay, before we go into that in detail, let me pause just long enough to say you're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Brussel on KLRB in Carmel.